be king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. The views of our guests, and, our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we're going to be talking about the Constitution of the United States. Now, to a lot of people, that's sort of a dull, uninteresting subject, but I will tell you, it is vitally important if we hope to survive as a free nation. Some years ago, I put together a 10-point program. What would you have to do if you wanted to be effective in the battle for the survival of Western civilization? Of course, the first point was to have a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, because you can't enter this battle, this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization, you can't enter this battle unless you do have a personal relationship with our Lord, else you'll be destroyed, and I've seen it happen so many times. But the second point was understanding the Constitution. Far more important than understanding who the bad people are and what the wicked people intend to do is understanding what you believe in, understanding the foundation of our freedom, which is really rested upon those concepts laid out in the Declaration of Independence and in the Constitution, where the power of government is to be limited over the chains, over the lives of the people, and we're to take the chains off the people and put the chains onto the politicians, because that government governs best, that governs the least. And so that's why Pastor David Whitney is with us again this evening. Of course, the Institute supports Radio Liberty, and we support the Institute because we think it's vitally important that you have this information. So with that as a background, Pastor David Whitney, thank you so very much for being with us.
On your show, and to speak with people who care enough about their country to learn the essential foundation, and really these three documents, you would say, are the essentials that you must know. The Declaration, which gives the purpose why our government was formed in the first place. And then, secondly, the Constitution itself, which describes the powers we, the people, have granted to our government in creating a civil government. And then, thirdly, the Bill of Rights, which actually is a restrictive aspect that shows where the lines are drawn, that the government cannot infringe beyond these points, that it is limited by those things. And that, unfortunately, is a worldview and an understanding of our founders that has been purposely lost, because those who have desired to destroy our constitutional republic and create a, whether you call it New World Order or a socialist system, whatever it is, those people know that if they are going to accomplish their aim, they've got to get around the Constitution. And to get around the Constitution, they've got to get people ignorant. They've got to create ignorance of the Constitution so that people don't know that the leaders are violating the supreme law of the land, which is exactly what the Constitution is. It is the supreme law of the land. And if you understand that fact, you clearly understand any law created by any legislator, signed by any president, said to be constitutional by any court, including the Supreme Court, any such law that truly violates the original intent of the Constitution, what was meant by the words by those who penned them originally, any law that does that is null and void. It's no law at all. And that fact is the reason why we study the Constitution, because we need an army of citizens who, with the knowledge of the original intent of the Constitution, can force our government to abide by the terms of that Constitution.
And if we are to be a nation of laws, we are to be a nation of the laws based upon the Constitution, not on a misinterpretation by men who would increase their power over our lives. Well, David, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, thus far in our study, we've not only looked at the history and the Declaration, we've also looked at the Article 1 of the Constitution. It's easy to remember what Article 1, 2, and 3 refer to. Article 1, the legislative branch of our federal government, the Congress and the Senate. Article 2 deals with the executive, and Article 3 with the judiciary. And by the way, those are in order of importance. That is, if you look at the number of words that are penned for the first article, far greater than for the second article, and then far greater than for the third, because they understood that Congress and the Senate were to have a great deal more power and influence than either the executive branch, the presidency, or the judicial branch. In fact, you know, people like Hamilton and others thought, you know, there's no danger at all from the judiciary. That branch of government, you know, can't do much of anything to damage this constitutional structure we're establishing because it has no power to do so, and it has very strong checks on its power, both from the legislative branch and the and the executive branch. But as we see today, if those two branches fail to do their duty, the result is that we have tyranny of the judges. It's so common today. And the wisdom of our founders, see, they understood that all men are sinners, as God's word clearly says. That even the best of men, even man or woman who is a Christian, is not yet sinless. And therefore, any human being put in a position of power must have very careful checks upon that power, or else they will abuse that power. They will ultimately become tyrannical. And, in part, that's why the design of the three branches was structured the way it was. So as we're looking here in Article 2 at the executive branch, we need to remember that the executive branch has some very strong checks upon its power, because our founders did not want to see the presidency become a monarchy or a dictatorship, whatever you want to call it. There were some who were trying to advocate for George Washington to take a position as the first monarch of the colony or the United States after they formed the country. But fortunately, or providentially, we should say, for our nation, George Washington, a man of godly character, refused to accept that kind of power, and so willingly stepped down from office in one of the amazing sights. To us, it's a very common thing to see one president transition to another, but in the day in which George Washington did that, almost no one in the foreign powers of the world ever expected him to do that, because no one with the kind of power at that office in European countries would have done that. They would have established basically a monarchy and reigned with a kind of dictatorial power. So in our structure of government, the transition from one president to another was carefully structured.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and again, our guest is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. David, go right ahead.
Well, we've already talked about Section 1 of Article 2, and Section 1 talks about the terms that the president serves, four-year terms. It talks about the selection and the qualifications, talks about the Electoral College, and we spent some time looking at that because it is much mocked and ridiculed today, and there's all sorts of forces wanting to attack and destroy it, which is a very unwise thing. Our founders had that in place to prevent mobocracy. And then Article 2, Section 1 talks about the oath that the president takes, and we need to remind ourselves an oath is not a promise made to those who elected him, not a promise made to congressmen, senators, judges, or anyone. It is an oath, a solemn vow made before Almighty God. And when people like to say, well, you know, the Constitution is a-religious or godless, some people have actually written a book, The Godless Constitution, they are absolutely wrong. Because when you have things like this element, an oath required by the president, an oath also required by congressmen and judges and everyone who is in a position of power in the federal government, an oath means that we're talking about a Christian system of government. Otherwise, if it was a Muslim system of government, you wouldn't have an oath to the God of the Bible. You'd have a swearing of allegiance to the Quran and so on. Not so in our system of government. Very clearly a Christian system, and the president was to take an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And Washington, our first president, added to the required phrase, that's the only phrase required by the Constitution, he added to that, so help me God. And that phrase started a tradition that every president since then has also included in their oath of office. Well, Section 2 of Article 2 speaks about the powers and duties of the presidency, and we spent some time talking about those, and then we come to Section 3, which talks about his powers and ceremonial duties, such as the State of the Union Address and recommending legislation and so on, and the things that he cannot do. But most of all, it emphasizes that the president is to faithfully execute all the laws of the United States. That is, the laws that are legitimate laws. And I know for most people that's a hard idea to swallow. What in the world are you talking about, a legitimate law? Isn't law whatever the government says it is, and therefore if it's on the books of, in the Federal Register, whatever, it must be legitimate because law is whatever the government says it is? Not so. Not according to our founders, and that's why they structured this Constitution and established that it is the supreme law of the land, which means any piece of legislation that is submitted that does not completely agree with the original intent of the Constitution is unlawful. It is not law. And when the president either signs a piece of legislation into effect that he knows is against the law, then he has violated his oath of office before Almighty God. In a moment, we're going to talk about what the consequences from the human side of that should be. But for a moment, let's just focus on the consequences from the divine side, because Scripture very clearly says that you better be extremely careful when you take an oath. You should never take an oath rashly or without carefully thinking through what that oath involves. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 says, "Don't be rash with your mouth. Let not your heart utter anything hastily before God." And it goes on to say, when you make a vow, verse 4, to God, do not delay to pay it, for he, that is God, has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. It is better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. Why should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the work of your hands? And so a person who breaks their vow before Almighty God is in an extremely dangerous spiritual situation. Now, I think of a number of examples of things that President Bush has done that are unconstitutional, but there's one piece of legislation where he admitted publicly that as he signed it, he knew it was unconstitutional. That's the McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform bill. So here's a piece of legislation. He says, I know it's unconstitutional, but I'm going to sign it anyway because, well, you know, the Supreme Court will take care of it. That is a violation of his oath. And there should be not only the spiritual remedy that God's going to hold him accountable for that, but there's a human remedy that our founders wisely structured into our Constitution, and that is talked about in Article 2, Section 4. It is called impeachment. That's right, impeachment. It applies to the president, vice president. Actually, it applies to all civil officers in the federal government can be impeached for three specific grounds. They can be impeached: treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And certainly violating one's oath of office and subverting the Constitution by signing unconstitutional legislation, that is grounds for impeachment. Now, when people hear of impeachment, they often remember the most recent case, that is Clinton, and his impeachment, we were told, was really focused on, well, was it high crimes and misdemeanors, his sex scandal there in the White House? And, you know, I really believe, and I think you do as well, Dr. Stan, that what Clinton was doing in other areas was far worse than that. He was committing treason. And perhaps you could say it was bribery as well to receive campaign contributions, cash, from communist China in exchange for giving away our military secrets so that they could then target our cities with nuclear warheads. I mean, he sold our country out as a traitor far worse than the, you know, some of the worst traitors we think of, the spies that were serving on the enemy's side against us, you know, Benedict Arnold in the Revolutionary War giving secrets to the British, selling out his own friends and his own army. But what Clinton did is equally as treasonous, and you could label it bribery. And he should have been impeached on those grounds. And yes, the sex scandal was terrible, and that should have also been considered a high crime misdemeanor. But they really focused on the one so that we would not even think about or even hear about the other. Well, the process of impeachment, first step is that the House of Representatives votes to impeach. They would actually draw up articles of impeachment, which are the charges against the president or other federal officer, and they would decide that the government has enough evidence to move forward with a trial against, in this case, Clinton. It's kind of parallel, you would say, to the court system when a person is charged with a capital crime. Say, you know, they committed murder or something like that. Well, if a person has been charged with a capital crime, the first thing must happen before a trial takes place is a grand jury would look at the evidence that the government has against this individual and determine, as they looked at the evidence, that the government has enough evidence to proceed with a trial. The grand jury doesn't determine guilt or innocence. It simply says, okay, there is enough evidence here that this person should stand trial. So a grand jury would hand out an indictment. And oftentimes people hear, well, with the indictment, that means the person's guilty. No, the indictment means the government has enough evidence that it ought to move towards a trial. And then in the trial, of course, the evidence is weighed and the jury makes a decision based on the evidence whether they're guilty or innocent. And so a similar pattern is here where the House actually draws up articles of impeachment and the House votes. All that required there is a majority vote to actually impeach the individual. In this case, we're talking about Clinton. The impeachment of Clinton took place. He was not removed from office because the second stage here is the trial that takes place in the Senate. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court presides as the judge in that trial, and the evidence is supposed to be investigated, that, you know, the charges of impeachment that the House has brought. The Senate then is supposed to investigate each of these, weighing the evidence, looking at it very closely, making a very rational decision based upon the evidence. Is this person guilty? Should they therefore be removed from office if they are guilty of having high crimes, misdemeanors, bribery, or treason? And we know in the Clinton case that the Senate was not given adequate time to even begin that process of truly determining whether the charges against Clinton were true or false. You mentioned that, I think you said, Dr. Sandra Trent Lott basically said, you got 3 days, when those who were presenting the case said, no, we need 3 months to truly present the evidence and be able to adequately weigh whether high crimes and misdemeanors have been committed here.
Well, of course, the story is told by David Shippers in his book, Sellout, and of course, he was actually a Democrat who was the counsel for the Republican group that impeached Bill Clinton. And so he accompanied the group of 10 congressmen to meet with Trent Lott to present their case, and Trent Lott announced, you know, you want 3 months, I'll give you 3 days, you can have 3 witnesses, and we're not going to impeach the President of the United States. Now, David Shippers didn't understand that Trent Lott was the 33rd degree Mason, that Bill Clinton was the highest ranking DMLA, or one of the highest ranking DMLAs in the country, and you can see all the Republicans who were Masons shifting over to the Democratic side to be sure that the President was not impeached. Of course, that whole thing was a scam. I mean, anybody who's ever analyzed and go into the background of the Monica Lewinsky case, why would she keep a dress that was stained with Bill Clinton's DNA on it? I mean, you couldn't wear that. Why would she keep it? Why would she tell others about it? Why, when she knew this was going to be investigated, didn't she get the dress cleaned? The whole story never added up at all. It was obvious as if this whole thing was planned to let Bill Clinton know, we can take you out at any time we want to. You better do what you're told. And I think that Bill Clinton recognized that fact. He was simply controlled by the power elite that controls all of the presidents, whether they be Republican or Democrat. And we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution, as we look into the most amazing document, the Constitution of the United States. Well, David, go ahead, pick up the story there.
And so when the Senate actually holds the trial with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court presiding, the Senate then, after examining the evidence, would make a vote. It requires two-thirds, a kind of supermajority, for the removal of this individual from office who's being tried, having been impeached, is then being tried by the Senate. And it's only been used 3 times against presidents. First was in 1868. The House actually impeached. They drew up articles of impeachment. They voted, and they successfully impeached Andrew Johnson. But in the Senate, it fell short one vote of removing him from office, 35-19. The issue in that day was how Reconstruction was going to be handled, how severely the South was going to be dealt with, and Andrew Johnson, from my point of view, wanted to be a little more moderate in the Reconstruction decisions, and the radical Republicans of that day wanted to punish the South severely, and so that was what their fight was over that ultimately led to his impeachment, but not to his removal from office. So you need to remember that distinction. A person is impeached once the House votes, more than 50% vote to impeach him, he is impeached, but actual removal from office doesn't happen unless the Senate votes to do so. And then we remember, in closer to our time, 1974, Richard Nixon, he actually resigned. He wasn't impeached. He actually resigned before the impeachment process completed. That the House was working and preparing articles of impeachment that may very well have successfully impeached him and caused a trial in the Senate. But he decided to resign and bow out of the whole thing before that would take place. And then, of course, Clinton, that we've talked about, he was impeached by the House, and when tried by the Senate on two articles of impeachment, and this was February 12, 1999, the first article, the vote was 45-55, and so he was not on that article removed, and the second article, Article 2, was 50-50, so again, he was not removed. And as you say, there was a behind-the-scenes agreement for that to be played out because of his membership in the secret societies of which so many of the power brokers in Washington, D.C. are part of. In addition to those three presidents that were impeached, or two were impeached but not removed, this has only been used 11 other times against federal officials. Well, think about that. We would say a total of 14 times there's been an impeachment or attempted impeachment and removal from office of federal officials in over 200 years. In 200 years, this process has succeeded and only resulted in actually four people being removed from office on the federal level. That's astonishing. It means that, it, as Thomas Jefferson rightly said, when he looked at the threat that judges presented to our system of government, he said, you know, impeachment is nothing but a scarecrow. It really has no teeth in it. It's not going to actually keep these judges in line, because it's not likely that anybody's actually going to follow through with impeachment and removal from office. And, you know, he was prescient. He saw what was happening, and he was absolutely right. Only four in that period of time have actually been removed from office. And so the design our founders had was extremely wise, to provide for the removal from office of a federal official who is violating his oath of office. He's treasonous, committing bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors, and it was wise to do that. But the problem is with the people in power who are usually unwilling to take that step. Of the 11 that were...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back. Go ahead. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney, and he's simply talking about the fact that we very, very rarely use the impeachment process. Only four people have ever been removed from office by impeachment in over 200 years. That includes judges and other federal officials. So go ahead, David.
And of those 11 times other federal officials, in addition to presidents, were the impeachment process was begun, nine of those were judges, one was a senator, and one cabinet official. And the Senate acquitted all but four, and the four were all judges. And the senator, the one senator who was taken through the process, he was acquitted because the Senate itself said, well, you know, Congress doesn't have any jurisdiction to impeach a senator, and their proper remedy would be expulsion from the Senate. And so they basically said, you didn't follow the rules. And I don't think that that's the case. I think any federal official, including a senator, could be impeached if they have committed treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. And the problem we have here is that we don't have officials willing to hold other government officials accountable. I think the reason is they themselves don't want to be held accountable. So they know, well, you know, if we do this against this senator over here or this judge over here, there's going to be a backlash. They're going to come after me. They're going to attempt to do this to me or to one of my fellow Republicans or fellow Democrats, whatever it might be. In our own state here, on a state level, not on a federal level, so it's a little different, but it's modeled after the same structure. Impeachment is possible. The House begins impeachment. Senate votes to remove from office. And this year, we had an egregious example of a wicked judge declaring that Maryland's law that's existed since Maryland was founded, way back as a colony, that marriage is only between a man and a woman. It can never be between two men or two women. That's impossible. It's against the law in Maryland. And yet this judge last year said, oh, well, that's unconstitutional. It's a violation of a person's civil rights that prevents them from marrying whoever they choose of whatever sex. And so same-sex marriage is coming to Maryland in this judge's wicked action of overturning Maryland's law. So here's a judge, violated her oath of office, violated the law and the Constitution of the state of Maryland, and my good friend, Delegate Don Dwyer, who's in the House of Representatives here in Maryland, filed for impeaching this judge. And it was astonishing to see the reaction to this. He was called every name in the book. He was called insane. He was called crazy by fellow legislators and judges and, you know, all, from every political spectrum, including his own Republican Party, attacked him mercilessly. And there was only two brave legislators who voted with him to say, yes, this judge should be impeached. And so, of course, the impeachment attempt failed. But it was very informative to see the response. It indicates to me that most people think you can never impeach a judge. A judge is, of course, they're gonna rule for life. There's no removing a judge from their position of power or office. It seems to be the attitude of both the media and most people in the political know. Unfortunately, for most Americans, that means, again, as we've discussed, impeachment, as Thomas Jefferson said, is often nothing but a scarecrow. And it doesn't even scare the black crows that often are federal officials, because they know it's not going to happen to them. But our founders wisely designed this as a legislative check upon the power of the presidency, as well as a legislative check, as we'll see, on the power of the court justices, and a right and a powerful tool that should be used frequently, because if you can impeach someone and successfully have them removed from office, every single official is put on notice. You too, one day, could be removed. If you violate your oath of office, if you violate the Constitution, you can be made to pay by the people of this state through their elected representatives, the House and the Senate. And so we should see and we should urge people in office to move towards impeachment whenever they see that. And even though my friend Delegate Dwyer did not succeed in moving forward with impeachment against this judge, nonetheless, a shot was fired across the bow that, you know, was actually heard across the nation as people picked it up the news. Oh, a judge in Maryland, there's an attempted impeachment of this judge. Well, how outrageous. But if that kind of message were happening again and again across the country, and especially in Washington, D.C., federal officials would be put on notice, you can be impeached. And the people, we the people who formed our civil government, recognize that impeachment is the rightful power of the legislature and should be used against wicked rulers who are violating and abusing our God-given rights.
And that is why the Founding Fathers put these as a stipulation within the Constitution. We have to be able to limit the arrogance of the elected and the non-elected officials, like our judges, who are appointed to those positions for life. Because you know, if they don't know that they can be impeached, why, they'll just go ahead and continue taking away our freedom step by step by step. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. David, go right ahead.
Well, want to just wrap up this talk about impeachment with noting this, that this provides for stability and an orderly means of removing officials without bloodshed. You know, America is really an astonishing country in the history of the world. that we have had a constitution that we have been functioning under for 200-plus years without, except in the case of the war between the states or the war of northern aggression, or perhaps, as I like to call it, the second war for American independence, the one we lost. Anyway, whatever you like to call that war, other than that example, there has not been bloodshed in terms of transition of power in our country, both in the election process. You talk about elections in many countries, and there's, you know, there's shootings and there's bombings and there's bloodshed in the streets when an election takes place, and when there's transition from one president to another, there's bloodshed, and you know, that's all too typical in the history of the world. And we, as a country, stand as an anomaly to that, in that the transition power, even in an impeachment and removal from office, is usually a very smooth and has never been a bloody event, even in the war between the states. The election there, both in the Confederate states as well as the election in the North, was without bloodshed. There was a great deal of heated debate, no doubt, but nonetheless, and there should be heated debate, because putting someone into the position of presidency is a very powerful role, perhaps, as someone said, one of the most powerful roles in the world. It shouldn't be that powerful. And again, our founders designed the presidency as a very limited role, not to be king, not to be monarch. And we see the destruction of that design in our day, and one of the tools that's been used to do that are the executive orders. And you read some of the things that the presidents have ordered that are clearly in violation of the constitutional separation of the three branches, where basically the president's making law with an executive order. Well, that's against the structure of what he's supposed to be doing. That making law is the business of the legislative branch, not the executive branch. The executive branch is to institute the laws that are passed by the legislative branch, not to make up the laws, not to invent them on his own. And the executive order is one of those tools that has been abused greatly, not only by the current administration and the past administration, but you go all the way back to FDR, and even before FDR, there's some examples of a growing abuse of that aspect of the presidential's power.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney. And before we go on, David, would you mind giving out your telephone number or your website so people would know how to get in touch with you?
Great. Yes, IOTCOnline.com is our website. That's IOTCOnline.com. We have a web store there, and the major product we'd like to encourage people to consider purchasing and hosting in their community, in their church, in their home, in the community center, is our Foundations course. That's basically what we're walking through here in these radio programs. Our Foundations course gives you a working knowledge of the founding documents, Declaration, Constitution, Bill of Rights, gives you the worldview, which is really a biblical worldview of law and government that was the worldview of our founders. Why they structured our government the way they did is based upon the Bible, and they clearly state that. So it gives you an ability to defend the Christian worldview of law and government, and defend that is exactly what our founders instituted, not from secular, atheistic sort of government at all. And also gives you an understanding of the way back. In other words, we have gone far, far afield from what the original intent of our founders was in structuring our form of government. And there is hope, because the way back involves us educating ourselves, our families, especially our church family. Every Bible-believing church in America, I pray, will one day be teaching this course to their people so that they can prepare their people to be Christian citizens. A Christian citizen cannot do their duty as a citizen unless they understand the Constitution, unless they understand what standard there to hold their elected officials accountable to. If you don't know the standard, you can't measure whether you're voting for a good candidate or a bad candidate. Which reminds me, by the way, that I encourage our listeners to go to www.iotconline.com. That on that front page, if you go to the bottom of that page, you'll find a link to, is your elected representative competent? is your elected representative competent? If you click on that, there's a list of about 10, 11 questions that you can ask either someone who is in office or someone who's running for office. Ask them these simple questions, and you can discern, especially if you've taken our course, you can discern very quickly whether they follow the original intent of the Constitution or if they are some degree of socialist. Simple questions like, what is the purpose of government? If you've taken our course, you know the answer to that question. What the purpose of government is, the Declaration clearly states, is to secure, protect, and defend our God-given rights, the first of which, of course, are right to life, right to liberty, and right to property, and you know, on from there, there's a long list of rights, but ask most elected officials. I've asked a number of elected officials the purpose of government. They don't come back with any such answer. They come back with some socialist drivel about, you know, creating a level playing field or, you know, making things fair or all that, you know. No, nonsense. That's not the purpose of government, and our founders made that very clear. So I encourage people to go to our website, iotconline.com, get that list of questions. Is your elected official competent? And you can go to our web store and order our host kit, or if you want to call us toll-free, you can call our toll-free number to order as well. That toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796.
And I think what's really so unique about this is you actually have everything on video. You don't have to do any of the teaching. It's all done by Dr. Eismo, but you do have a list of questions to ask. Afterwards, you have a list of the answers, and you'll learn so much, and hopefully you can put these programs on, and then you the second or the third time you put them on, why people will begin to learn more and more, and you'll learn so much more, and then hopefully the other people who attended those programs will set up their institutes of the Constitution. Now, David, I understand that these institutes have been established all across America.
That's right. Currently, 47 states have at least one class. Many states have multiple classes. I was talking with somebody in northwestern Pennsylvania who's graduating a class this very weekend. And here in Maryland, we have just graduated two classes recently, and we see this all over the country. Classes graduating, and as they do, I encourage them to tell their students, you are now more qualified than 99% of the people in Washington, D.C., to serve in the position of power and office, because you now understand the original intent and are committed to the original intent of the Constitution. And we need to raise up people who will run for office who are committed to that and replace those socialists and God-haters that are destroying our constitutional republic and violating our God-given rights. So it's very encouraging to see this as a grassroots movement. I mean, this is spreading person to person, and we know that's the most effective way to get around the roadblock that the major media is never going to tell the American people the truth. They keep preaching we're a democracy, and that's a lie, and all those sort of things. And obviously, our public school system is lying to those students and indoctrinating them in the wrong system of government altogether. So there's many roadblocks to the truth, but we can get around all of those roadblocks with this simple program. It's something every person can do. It doesn't take a person with knowledge in history or law. Anyone can do this, and that's the beauty of it. It's simple enough, and we're encouraged as we see a grassroots movement springing up across our country to take it back from really the socialists and the pagans who largely are in power in almost every level of government today.
And I think, of course, there is another thing, and that is there are people of great wealth who believe that they should rule this nation. Now, they have intentionally set out to remove any understanding of what our government's about from our textbooks, from our institutions of learning. And I know when I graduated from the University of California in Berkeley with a Phi Beta Kappa Chi and honors, I honestly thought that America was a democracy. I didn't know the difference between a republic and a democracy. I didn't know that our founding fathers warned future generations that democracies would always eventually result in tyranny. And I certainly didn't have any grasp at all of what our Constitution or our Bill of Rights said, the significance of our Declaration of Independence and its relationship to the Constitution. And I was a minor in history. I, of course, a major in a pre-med, but minor in history, took a whole semester of history, and never once did anybody tell me the truth. The tragedy is that this happens all across America in literally every major university. And there is an organized effort to change our textbooks, to change our precept, to change our reality. That's why the Institute of the Constitution and the effort that David Whitney and the other people there at the Institute their effort is so vitally important. And so we hope many of you want to check into this. If you value your freedom, if you would like to pass on to your children, your grandchildren, the freedom that we inherited from previous generations, then you need to get involved. And if not now, when? And if not you, who's going to do it? Go ahead, David.
And that's a good warning, because the hour is late in terms of what's happened to the destruction of our constitutional republic, but not so late. And I talk with a lot of people who kind of wring their hands and say, well, you know, it's too late for America. But I would argue it's not too late. Not too late. Why? Because the Constitution still is the supreme law of the land. And if the people rose up and said, wait a minute, if the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and all this legislation coming forward and being signed by the President, and the Supreme Court says it's just fine, no problem with it at all, these people are all law breakers. And we've got a conspiracy of lawbreakers in Washington, D.C., who are violating the law. We, the people, need to do something about it. And if the people rose up, we could. We could replace them. We could only put those in office who would follow the Constitution. And that's our great hope. And it's going to take a widespread grassroots movement of Americans who know the Constitution and are committed to seeing it followed. And if we have that commitment, we can rise up and do a great deal. The first thing we can do, of course, is educate ourselves and then educate everyone around us that we possibly can.
Amen to that. Well, okay, David, now what's the next item?
Well, we've basically covered Article 2 there, the executive branch, so let's move into Article 3 and begin discussing the judiciary and the establishment of the courts and judges. Now, the beginning statement there of Section 1 of Article 3 says the judicial power vests, that is, it permanently resides in the Supreme Court and lower courts as Congress determines. Now, this is very important to remember. The only court that must exist on the federal level in these United States, the only court that must exist is the Supreme Court. All the other federal circuit courts, district courts, whatever, all of those could be eliminated by Congress any time it chose. All of those are completely under the control of Congress if they decided to redistrict them all or change the salary structure or do whatever. In other words, federal judges are often given a pass in America today, and people say, well, I guess, you know, they did what they did and we can't do anything about it. I think of the Ninth Circuit there that's done so many things that are just outrageous, you know, saying, well, you can't recite the Pledge of Allegiance because it says under God. You got to take that out of the Pledge of Allegiance. And back here in Washington, all the hand-wringing of congressmen and senators, oh, we wish we could do something. Well, let's just pass a piece of legislation that says that we affirm that under God should stay in the pledge. That's ridiculous. You see, they're actually lying to the American people, saying we can't do anything about it. You know, the judge has decided, and when the judge decides, we all just kind of have to wring our hands and say that that's the final thing. There's nothing we can do. That's a bunch of poppycock. Unless it's the Supreme Court, the federal court could be completely stripped of its powers or redistricted or fired. They could easily, without even going through an impeachment process, they could decide, we're going to get rid of this guy, we're going to get rid of that guy, we're going to get rid of whoever we want.
And I think the other thing is, of course, even with the Supreme Court, the Congress has the ability, simply with a simple majority vote, to limit the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. They don't need a supermajority, do they, David, to do that?
No, not at all.
All they have to do is just tack on to any bill mm-hmm. a statement that this court will have no jurisdiction in reference to this legislation. They could have done that with abortion, with partial birth abortion, but all of it is pandering to give the American people the idea that they're really doing something. All the time they're not doing anything at all. And they could, at any time they want to, limit the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court in matters of abortion or homosexuality or really on any issue. And yet, of course, they refuse to do it. And George Bush, the president, who says that he's pro-life, didn't even suggest that they do that for the partial birth abortion bill, which, as you know, has been struck down by the Supreme Court. So until the American people understand that so much of what goes on is simply fun and games, it's all symbolism over substance and rhetoric over reality to give the American people the idea that Congress is really trying to do the right thing, but aw shucks, those wicked people on the Supreme Court, there's nothing we can do. And of course, if you read the Constitution, you'd know that what they could do, and they know what they could do. They just don't want you to know what they can do. Go ahead, David.
That's right. And if we, the people, know the Constitution, we can yell very loud at our congressmen and senators and say, look, buddy, this is what you can do, and if you don't do it, and it's your duty to do it, we will see to it that you're removed from office, because we're not going to tolerate somebody who allows things like abortion to continue in this land when it should be clearly outlawed. It's clearly against our declaration that we have a God-given right to life and so forth. So it takes knowledge on the part of citizens to hold their elected officials accountable, because, as you said, those elected officials, they just want to give a good show and get reelected.
And I think it's so interesting, this immigration debate.
Oh, yeah.
And the House, you know, got so many calls from concerned citizens about this that they refused to go along with George Bush's plan to make all the illegal aliens legal, to make them all guest workers and then citizens of the United States. And, you know, many of the congressmen have said, well, this is what the people want. They want to guard the borders. They want to control illegal immigration. They want to enforce the immigration laws. Doesn't matter what the president says, and the inference is these congressmen want to get reelected. And it's only because the senators, most of them are not standing for election in November, that they're going to go ahead and carry out the president's wishes. And incidentally, there's an article that appeared on the 16th of May. That was just 2 days ago in the Washington Times. That pointed out that if the Senate legislation on immigration had passed, and we don't know whether it will or not, but if their legislation had passed, within 20 years, we would have an additional 196 million new citizens here in the United States. 196 million new citizens. And if you'd like to see a copy of that article, you give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send it to you. This analysis by the Heritage Foundation. But you're not going to hear that. You see, the plot is to destroy America, to destroy our sovereignty, to make us a bilingual, bicultural, chaotic society where they can play one group against the other. Mr. Bush and the people who control him know exactly what they're doing, but then they control the Republican Party, too. Their purpose is to destroy America, to destroy our sovereignty. And, of course, when the congressman got the word from the American people, and believe me, an awful lot of people have been calling, both the congressmen and senators, and I hope you are as well. The congressmen got the message, and they passed a legislation that, although not good, was not terrible. The Senate's legislation was aimed at destroying America. 196 million more people in America within 20 years by the year 2026. What would that do? It would increase our population by two-thirds.
Hmm.
Go ahead.
Astounding. So don't believe your congressman or your senator when they say, oh, we can't do anything about these judges. See, the lie that they have sold the American people is that judges, and they'd like to call it the independence of the judiciary. Well, wait a minute. There's no independence. The judiciary is beholden to the legislative branch as well as the executive branch. The checks and balances are designed to prevent a tyrannical judiciary from developing. And actually, those checks and balances against the judiciary are so strong that some of our founders said, you know, the branch of government you have the least to worry about is the judiciary. When in fact, it comes down here in history, they're the worst branch of government simply because the other two branches that are supposed to hold them in check have failed to do that repeatedly again and again and again, and have been able to sell the lie to the American people. Oh, we can't do anything. You know, a judge has ruled, and therefore, whatever judge rules, we just have to do it.
And that's this old idea, we're a nation of laws. Well, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, we are a nation of lawbreakers. And some of them are wearing black robes, and they're sitting on the Supreme Court. And but David, let's get your website and your telephone number up one more time.
Yes, our website is iotconline.com, and our toll-free phone number is 866-730-9796.
One more time.
That's 866-730-9796.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two, and we'll wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. Well, David, go ahead, and you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, you know, as we look at the judiciary and the structure, the Congress is in complete control of all the lower federal courts. And furthermore, Section 1 of Article 3 states that judges hold office during good behavior. And so in addition to impeachment, and we'll talk about impeachment as it relates to judges in a bit, but in addition to that, the simple standard of good behavior, however that is defined. In other words, a man who's violating other oaths that he takes, say marriage vows, that's not good behavior. In other words, a judge has to be a morally upstanding member of the community, or he cannot continue as a judge. And most people don't know this. It's like that's one of those hidden phrases in the Constitution that is swept over and never mentioned, that these people have to be held accountable. And again, as the legislative branch and executive branch that are to hold the judiciary accountable. Now, the framers wanted judges to be insulated from political pressure, which is why we don't vote on the Supreme Court. Those are appointed by the president and with the advice and consent of the Senate. But, for example, Governor Morris, one of the signers of the Constitution, he said, those who are charged with the important duties of administering justice should, if possible, depend only on God. Boy, look at that change of view from the day of our founders, with one of the signers of the Constitution, to our day. Governor Moore said, those who are charged with the important duties of administering justice, that is, judges, should, if possible, depend only on God. In other words, these men or women are to be morally upright and upstanding in the community, and if they're not, they are to be removed from office because they serve only during terms of good behavior, and they can be removed if they fail to do that. Also in that Section 1, the compensation for a judge may not be diminished during tenure, and this, of course, prevents congressional interference with their duties. However, they can be redistricted. They can have their staff cut. There's many other weapons that the Congress has available to make life rather unpleasant for a judge who is violating and or messing with the Constitution and not following the rule of law. And that's the thing that we need to remember as Americans. What is taking place daily in Washington, D.C. is a violation of this Constitution we're talking about. And when anyone violates the Constitution, they are breaking the law. And if there's an organized group of them violating the Constitution, they're an organized group of criminals, lawbreakers.
We're out of time. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless. Thank you.
Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Pastor David Whitney. And let me commend the work that they do at the Institute of the Constitution. And if you're not involved helping us to educate the American people, who's going to do it? And if not now, when? When it's too late to save this country? Well, we do hope many of you will give serious consideration to getting in touch with the Institute of the Constitution. Now, we do carry a number of things having to do with the background of our nation. We have a 4-tape set, The Foundations of Our Freedom. We have a number of books going into what has actually happened as far as our constitutional system. We have David Barton's book, wonderful book, Original Intent. John Salfont's Abandonment Theology. the book on the wall of separation. We certainly have John Stormer's excellent book going into the background of our courts. We have Phyllis Schlafly's book. All of these books are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a list of the various books that we have that deal with the what's happening to our Constitution and the impact of the courts. And you have to understand that our courts have been systematically packed with people who hate America. When you understand that, why, you'll understand what's going on. John Stormer's book, Betrayed by the Bench. We think it's a very important book. And, of course, Phyllis Schlafly's book, The Supremacists, going into the Supreme Court and their attitude that they will become the new rulers. Doesn't matter what Congress does. Doesn't matter what the people want. These people are the elite. Judge Bork has referred to them, the Olympians, who, of course, know what's best for us common folks. You need to get the books, Betrayed by the Bench, The Supremacists, of Original Intent by David Barton, Abandonment Theology by John Chalfont, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers by Tim LaHaye. All of these books are important, and you need to help us get the truth out while we still can. And then our four-tape set, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers, an excellent four-tape set, which will stand you in good stead with an understanding of what's really going on and the foundations of our freedom. Well, ladies and gentlemen, of course, to understand who it is that's really trying to destroy our society, you need to get our four-tape set on the secret government. You need to get our four-tape set on secret societies, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness, and you can get the video or the DVD that goes along with it. For the historical background of the secret society that came to America about 1650, you need to get the video or DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. That's The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And then, of course, we also suggest the other videos by Chris Pinto, who incidentally will be our guest tomorrow evening on the second hour, his Megiddo 1, his Megiddo 2. And to understand the spiritual component of what's going on today, let me suggest our four-tape set on the supernatural. Let me suggest the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, written by Johanna Michelson, who was actually the apprentice to a spiritual healer, a psychic surgeon who performed all sorts of miracles. But, of course, they were not of the God of this world. They were the God of the dark side. So, pray for America. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. And then, please, pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And so I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our colleagues, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line, Clay Douglas, and Clay is going to be a speaker at the Conspiracy Conference. It's going to be held on the Memorial Day weekend, May 27th, May 28th. It's over at the Hyatt Regency in the Santa Clara area. And, of course, if you're interested, you can call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999, or simply go to conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon.com. And I'm going to be speaking. In fact, I'm the lead-off speaker. Jim Mars is going to be there. Certainly Ted Gunderson. There's going to be a number of very, very key people that I'm looking forward to hearing speaking. So on all various aspects of what's going on today. So, but anyway, Clay's going to be talking there. And Clay, what are you going to be speaking on?
Well, I'm going to be talking about the fallacy of the New World Order that we've been fighting for so long.
All right, fine. Of course, Clay has had a magazine, and it's coming out in tabloid form. Are you going to keep it in the tabloid form?
No, sir. I am putting the finishing touches on the last page of the next issue, which will be there available at the Conspiracy Con, and I'll be distributing it up and down California. I'm going to concentrate on California because of the Conspiracy Con. It will be in magazine format. We will have it back in the bookstores and on the newsstands.
All right. Of course, Clay's had his own his own radio program for a long time, published the magazine. Of course, he's a motorcycle rider, and he had an unfortunate accident, laid him up. How long were you laid up with that, Clay?
Well, I was kept unconscious for 3 months, which I believe was absolutely needless. The only thing it did is run up my hospital bills, allow the magazine to go down, and I was visited in the hospital after I finally was allowed to regain consciousness by a couple of guys that said they were government agents and asked me if I'd been hallucinating. And I had, actually, and I hadn't mentioned it to anybody, and they said I could thank them for that. But I had been kept on a regime of drugs that simply wasn't called for. I had, when I finally came down off the drugs and a different hospital, Stan, I was up and walking around, up and down stairs in 2 days.
Well, how did you get transferred from the hospital where you were to the other hospital?
Well, my wife finally realized that it was the drugs that they were giving me were a little excessive, and probably just fortunate that I didn't die of an overdose.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Clay Douglas, who's certainly been in this battle for a long period of time. Ladies and gentlemen, there really is a move to create a one-world government. There really is a move to destroy Christianity, to create a new one world religion where all religions will have equal value. The Muslim faith, the Hindu faith, the Buddhist faith, the Shinto faith, Judaism, Christianity, really doesn't matter, or does it matter? Is there absolute truth? Is there a true religion? Is Jesus Christ who he claimed he was? Well, we'll be back in just a moment or two with Clay Douglas, because I believe that Jesus is who he said he was. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Clay Douglas. And so you're going to be talking on the New World Order and, of course, their plan to really undermine and destroy our country.
Well, yes, sir, I will be, but I don't think it's the New World Order. Where do we get that term, Dr. Stan?
Well, actually, that term really comes from the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, because the term on the back of the dollar bill, Novo Ordo Seclorum, needs a new secular order. The term New World Order actually came from the writings of Alice Bailey in the early part of the last century, and then, of course, they were widely circulated within the occult. But, of course, the first time they were used, you know, publicly was by Judge Bush, President George Bush, on September 11th, I believe it was 1991, something like that.
Yes,
but anyway.
Sir. Yes, sir, it was. You know, now we can see a new world coming into view, a new world order. But I believe, Stan, that we've got the, we're fighting the same battle that Jesus Christ fought.
I was thinking, absolutely right. I think that this battle has been around for a long time, and the ultimate plan, going back to the time of ancient Nimrod, was to bring about a world government. That's, of course, why Alexander the Great set out to conquer the world, because he was a student of the mystery religions.
Yes, and, you know, it probably goes all the way back to the building of the pyramids, you know, with the... But 2,000 years ago, Jesus talked about the Pharisees, talked about and ran the money changers out of the temple. And I said, today we've got the money changers. They're still here. They're still with us. They just called the temple the Federal Reserve.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that as well. In fact, somebody had written a book called The Secrets of the Temple. And my understanding is he didn't last too long after he wrote that book. Of course, the temple he was talking about is what Clay Douglas is referring to, and that is the American Federal Reserve. We have a privately owned bank that controls the monetary system of our government and our society, and is actually set out to destroy the stability of our monetary system. Of course, the Federal Reserve System was established to give us a stable currency. And prevent inflation and erosion of the value of our currency, and they have intentionally set out to do exactly the opposite. We've created tremendous artificial prosperity in the United States and tremendous artificial prosperity all throughout the entire world. And as Paul Volcker said, why, we've really had a tremendous ride, and we've created prosperity for the rest of the world, but that's not their function. Their function was to protect America, and they betrayed that function, and everybody listening to the audience will one day pay the cost of their excesses. Hold it. Be right to you. Okay, our guest is Clay Douglas. Clay, pick up the story there.
Well, we've had a few presidents that tried to buck the central bank, which is pretty high up on the Communist Manifesto, central bank and graduated income tax. And the Federal Reserve has never been audited. And like our friend Carl Klang says, you know, if you can print your own money, pretty soon you can buy up the whole neighborhood. And that's exactly what they're doing. And I think their plans for world government have been here for thousands of years. I mean, we've... the British replaced the Roman soldiers who pretty much conquered the known world. And then we now are being groomed, I believe, to replace the British. I mean, we've got troops in 100 different countries, and there's no reason for that, Stan.
No, not actually. I'm closer to 130, at least according to Ron Paul. And I think the average American really should ask, why do we have troops all stationed in 130 nations? Why are we still occupying Germany 60 years after the Second World War ended, and occupying Japan 60 years after the Second World War ended, and still occupying South Korea 50 years after the Korean War ended? Why are we doing that? And nobody ever wants to ask that question, do they?
We are the instrument of the New World Order, the Old World Order. We are the... we've replaced the Roman legionnaires. Our sons and daughters are over there fighting in Iraq now for exactly what reason? They lied. The president lied. You know, the intelligence wasn't there. The people didn't have depleted, they didn't have any weapons of mass destruction, and we put more radiation into Iraq than we did into Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
You're talking about, of course, the depleted uranium that we're, of course, using there. And of course, when it is fired, it sets on fire. It creates a radioactive dust that gets into the lungs and then gets into the body. And
it's killing our troops. Our sons and daughters are inhaling that and coming back over here and passing it on. They found now, Stan, that the depleted uranium actually attaches to the DNA. So it is modifying humanity. I mean, we're going to be as genetically altered as the food they're feeding us. And I think we're approaching right now a very, very critical time in world history as well as the American history. I think that we are facing the same thing that brought Rome down, the same thing that happened to the Russian people when the Bolsheviks took over. When the Soviet Union was created, they killed 50 million, starved 50 million Russians, white Russians, Ukrainians, to death to start the Soviet Union. And we never really are told in school or in colleges exactly what happened there. How did the Soviet Union come up? How did they become the evil empire, as Reagan referred to it as? Did they have law on their side? They had the color of law. And, they starved people to death. They threw them in gulags. And they're building the gulags right here. Halliburton has got $385 million to build detention centers. Can you say concentration camps? For the illegals? Well, they had 700,000 of them in the streets in L.A., and they weren't picked up by Homeland Security, by ICE, by anyone. So maybe the camps aren't for them. Maybe they're for us.
Well, I think it's vitally important that people understand that we have the same spiritual forces at work here in the United States that they had in the Soviet Union. If you really want to understand how it was that the communists were able, with a very, very small cadre and very little support among the Russian people, to establish their ruthless dictatorship there, in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, I simply take the chart that appears in Herbert Hoover's memoirs, Volume 2. And of course, following the First World War, there was tremendous starvation in Europe and in Russia. And of course, people were dying simply of starvation. So the magnanimous Americans put together relief efforts to send to Europe and to send to Russia. And here in Russia, of course, they had a totally brutal communist regime. And if you just read what Herbert Hoover writes, and yet, isn't it interesting that 97% of all the supplies that we sent to Russia, both food and medical supplies, 97% went to the small area controlled by the communists, and 3% went to the large area controlled by the anti-communists. Do you honestly think that happened by accident? And, of course, if you read the writings we have from a man named Bruce Lockhart, who had actually been sent by Lord Milner, who was leader of Cecil Rhodes' secret society in 1918, Bruce Lockhart was sent to Russia to confer with Lenin and to keep Lord Milner and the members of Cecil Rhodes' secret society appraised of what was happening. And Lenin would come to Bruce Lockhart, and he would come to a man named Fred Thompson, who represented Mr. Robbins of the American Federal Reserve Board. And Bruce Lockhart didn't understand why Lenin would come to him and Mr. Thompson and ask advice on how Lenin should be running Russia. Fascinating reading. The book is called Imperial Agent, but we simply quote important parts of that book. Till the American people understand that communism has been created and financed and really controlled from the West since its inception, you really can't understand anything going on or why it was that the communists organized those massive demonstrations all across America here on May 1st, official communist holiday, with 500,000 to 700,000 illegal aliens, or at least immigrants, marching through the streets of Los Angeles and New York City. Somebody put up an awful lot of money. And, of course, we know the communists were involved. How do we know? because I read the communist newspapers, and it's very obvious that they were involved. So who's funding the communists? Why, the Ford Foundation and some of our great tax-exempt foundations controlled by some of the wealthiest men in America. Go ahead, pick
if
up
this
story.
If you remember, Congress sent an investigator over there. The name escapes me for the moment. He went to the Ford Foundation, and they said that their goal and that what they were trying to do was to merge us with the Soviet Union.
That was Mr. Norman Dodd. In fact, I have an interview with Mr. Norman Dodd in our four tape set on the secret government, and you're absolutely right.
And this, you know, what they did in Russia, the communists went to the Bolsheviks, went to the Russian people and convinced them that the Tsar was oppressing them, that the Tsar was at fault there, and they are doing the same thing with the illegals that are up here, whether they're Mexicans or OTMs, whoever they are. They're trying to convince them that us white folks, us Christians, are somehow oppressing them, and that they should just have the run of the house, a run of the mansion. We built the mansion here called America, and they want to open the doors and come in and trash it.
Well, of course, the average Mexican is a hard-working individual. He's simply being manipulated, but then we're being manipulated, too, until the American people understand that we're being manipulated and they're being manipulated, and we don't get to the point where we hate anybody. You know, these people want a better life. The reason that they are so impoverished in Mexico is because of our policies there. In fact, it was the NAFTA program that really wiped out the income of the poor Mexican farmer who grew corn. We flooded their country with subsidized American corn at such ridiculously low prices that it drove many of these Mexican farmers across the border in search of work so they could support their family. And once they got here, we did everything we could to reward them for violating our laws. And we steadfastly refused to enforce our immigration laws. And suddenly the president, now that he's got legislation he's trying to get through, wants to do something about it. Go ahead, Clay.
Well, you know, I've tried to say on my radio show, if I was down in Mexico, I'd be probably walking right up here with them, trying to, if I couldn't feed my own family down there through my labor, then I would be trying to find somewhere else. It's not the people. You know, we have to avoid that. When we talk about the illegals, it's not the people that are at fault here. It's the governments. It's the power behind the governments that are at fault here.
And it's both the Mexican government, but specifically our government, which has steadfastly refused to guard our borders, has certainly had a catch and release program. You catch them and you immediately release them. If they're Mexicans, you take them back to Mexico so they can try again. If they are from another country, why, you give them a deportation hearing and tell them to come back in a month, and you'd never guess what happens. None of them ever come back again. Why, shucks, imagine that. We told them to come back. They call that catch and release. They know what they were doing. They were specifically not trying to stop people from coming in here illegally, but we can't let the American people out. They steadfastly refused to enforce the laws there was a federal crime to knowingly hire illegal aliens. They've known that for 20 years. That's how they got the 1986 legislation through.
Yes, sir. And, you know, our government is in collusion with the Mexican government, and they're both our Congress and our Senate, the majority, are working for the bankers, working for the banksters, working for the New World Order, and they're turning their head, and they are running these people up to destabilize America.
Yeah, that's...
So we need those concentration camps for the illegals. Well, if Halliburton was... who got $385 million to build detention centers, if they were building them for the illegals, why didn't they just make a sweep through L.A. and pick up 700,000 of them and put them in those detention centers? I think those detention centers are for us. And on my video, Stan, The True Face of FEMA, the first Homeland Security meeting, I filmed it there, and we've got Colonel John Brinkerhoff, formerly of FEMA, now with Homeland Security, saying, in case of a single outbreak of smallpox in a major metropolitan area, we'll need 400,000 well-armed, well-trained, organized, disciplined troops
Okay, Dr. Stan, go ahead, Clay.
Colonel Brinkerhoff is asked by law enforcement there at Sandia Labs, are you talking about the National Guard, Colonel? No, they're too expensive. No, we need a cheap source of well-armed, well-trained, organized, disciplined troops. Now, who the hell do you think he's talking about? Is he talking about the Chinese? We do know the Chinese are being taught to speak English. Or is he talking about the 22 million illegals here? If they join the Army and follow orders for 6 years and disarm the American people, then they become the citizens here. And smallpox? Well, the smallpox didn't materialize. The anthrax didn't materialize. So now we've got bird flu, which I don't believe it's bird flu at all. I believe it's the swine flu they dug up about 6 years ago.
Well, whatever it is, of course, they're trying to scare us to death, and I think that so much of what's going on today is simply a massive diversion to take our attention away from what's really going on behind the scenes. If we have an outbreak of this avian flu, I will tell you, I personally believe it will be genetically engineered in some laboratory someplace. It's not simply by accident that well over 100 microbiologists have died under very strange terms and very strange circumstances in the last couple of years, like, you know, stabbed multiple times and stuffed into the trunk of a car. Of course, they'd like us to believe it was a suicide, but, you know, we know that it isn't. Somebody is killing off the microbiologists here in America, and you'd have to ask, why are they killing them off? What do they know that they don't want us to learn?
Well, the Gestapo made the statement, Heinrich Mueller, made the statement that we released the swine flu, that we had developed that as a biological weapon to use against Germany in the World War One, and it got loose and killed millions of people around the world. And we're supposed to watch out for the birds, watch out for those chickens, but don't pay any attention to those planes spraying overhead, something. And we've got something more in this issue of the Free American. We've got we point out that they've got now the National Animal Identification System, NAIS. And if you have chickens, if you're raising chickens in your backyard, if you're raising goats in your backyard, if you're raising cattle in your backyard, you're a small independent farmer, which has always been the backbone of America. Now, suddenly, the government steps in, and you've got to pay for the chips. They can't get us to take the chip because that's too much like the mark of the beast, but they're going to make us chip all of our chickens, pay for it, track them. If the chicken runs across the road, you got to report it to the government. So you got forms to fill out, more paperwork to fill out, and I don't know what happens if you accidentally eat the chip. You know, when you're trying to cook a chicken.
Yeah, this is the most incredible legislation. I mean, if you had a couple of geese in your backyard, you'd have to have them chipped. Now, you had a little chicken, a little tiny chicken for your kids, you have to have a chip in it. The chick may only cost, you know, 50 cents, but it's going to cost you $15 or $20 to get it chipped. And, of course, the veterinarians love this thing. There'll be an RFID chick in every little chip, in every little chip.
And you'll have to do it with your pets. We've got a four pages on this in the Free American in the next issue, and you'll be able to make copies of the whole plan to pass out to your neighbors.
This is the
modern way that they're going to starve us to death, and they're going to, between the bird flu and this NAIS, they're going to probably make
Hold that right there, Clay.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Clay is just talking about this new legislation that will require every animal in the United States to be chipped. Now, why is that? Well, they might get lost, or we had one case of mad cow disease, and because we had we didn't know where that cow came from. That's why we've got to chip every animal, every chicken, every goose, geese, every domestic animal, dogs and cats in the United States, because they had one case of mad cow disease. They didn't know where it came from. That is the justification. And if you believe that, why, I'd like to sell you some of my stock in the Golden Gate Bridge. My telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for our guest this evening, Clay Douglas. And Clay, would you like to get your telephone number, your website out there?
Yes, sir. My website is pretty easy. It's The Free American. And subscriptions to The Free American, we're back to publishing it monthly after a two-year hiatus. After my accident, I couldn't keep The Free American going. Hard to do when you're unconscious, Dan. But it's back and it's going, and it'll be hopefully it'll be back on the newsstands. But the best way to get it is to subscribe to it. Subscriptions are $50 a year. We had to go up $10 because the postage went up. And printing has gone up. It will be a magazine format. The last one, the first renewed Free American, was in a tabloid form because I had been publishing a motorcyclist-oriented magazine for 3 years over in Phoenix, and along with the Free American at first. And I managed to keep that going. But now we've the Free American is back out, and we've got advertisers, we've got supporters. All of our former subscribers have been mailed a copy with a complete story of what happened.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good tonight. My call concerns that I'm very worried about the shadow government. This other government that we have, which I believe is the NSA and the CIA, but recently I read in the paper that that AT&T Corporation and Verizon collected millions and millions of phone calls from phone records and gave them over to the government. But what government did they give it over to?
Well, at one time, the information from my connections in the CIA said that the CIA, the Mossad, and the KGB had infiltrated each other so much that it was practically the same agency. And I think the intelligence agencies are simply the arm of the New World Order.
And I think that's probably exactly right, Ray.
Yeah.
But you ask about, of course, this whole thing about spying on the American people as if this is something new. You go up on the Internet and look up Echelon. It's been around for 20 years. Mm-hmm. They actually have computers that monitor every telephone call you make,
yeah,
every email you send, every fax you send. And, of course, they're spying on the American people. They have their agents here collecting dossiers. 40-some years ago, I was approached and asked as a young doctor if I would go to cocktail parties, you know, and then record what people said and send it into the government. Fortunately, I did not join at that time. I'm glad I didn't. I might have ended up in a box a long time ago.
Yeah,
but they are spying on the American people in violation of our own laws. But, of course, they never want to mention that. But this whole scam of making this big fuss about AT&T is to cover for the fact they've been doing it for a long time.
They've been doing
it
themselves. They don't need AT&T to do it. They do it anyway.
That's right.
They do it anyway. An Israeli firm was tapping all of the phones for the government. Uh-huh. And I believe that what happened to me, I had just called in to my son, and I told him where I was. I was on the motorcycle. And I told him, I said, where do you need me to go? And he said, well, you need to go to the shop. You go down 24th Street, turn left to McDowell. And somebody was waiting for me.
Oh, my God.
And I really didn't want to believe that. I thought it was just an accident at first until they tried to kill me again in the hospital. A woman shows up with a needle about 8 inches long, about an inch in diameter, filled with some purple liquid. Right. Hi, Mr. Douglas. I have to give you this.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Oh, yeah? What is that? Well, that's a tranquilizer. Well, I don't feel like being tranquil today. I'm going to pass. Oh, you have to. You have to. I have to give you this.
Oh.
No, ma'am. I've got the right to refuse medication. I don't know who you are. I don't know what that is. The doctor didn't prescribe it to me, and I'm not taking it. Well, I'm going to go get security, and they're going to hold you down.
Right.
I'm going to give this to you.
I had one more thing to say, if I can say it.
Yeah, go ahead, Ray.
Yeah. You know, President Kennedy, rest his soul, wanted to dismantle the CIA to the four winds, And then he fired Alan Dulles, and lo and behold, Alan Dulles shows up on the Warren Commission, you know, appointed by LBJ.
To investigate the assassination.
Yeah,
investigate the... Isn't that a coincidence? Hey, hold that thought right there.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ray is just saying that isn't it strange that President Kennedy fired Alan Dulles, and then after President Kennedy is killed, who do they get to investigate the assassination of John Kennedy, but the very same Alan Dulles that Kennedy had fired? I'm sure that Alan Dulles didn't find any evidence of CIA involvement in the assassination, did he?
Oh, no. But the thing that really bothers me about is the one bullet theory.
Arnold Specter hated me during the presidential elections, the Republican caucuses in 1996. I was with Charles Collins, and every time Arnold Specter got up to speak, I'd walk down the aisle and say, "Arnold, tell us about that magic bullet, Arnold." And Charles Collins was trying to do the same thing that Kennedy did. He pointed out to the Republicans that we could buy back the Federal Reserve. We could wipe out a $9 trillion debt for a few billion.
Yeah.
And every time Charles tried to speak on that, every television camera in the hall was pointed at the ground, and every cameraman took a smoke break, and two or three of the caucuses, they actually unplugged his microphone when he started to talk about the Federal Reserve.
Now, for our listeners out there, Charles Collins ran, he ran the Republican ticket, didn't he?
He was the first Republican to sign up. There were 9 Republicans running for president.
What year was that?
1996.
Right, and of course Charles Collins was a very dedicated patriot who tried to get the truth out to the regular channels, but you have to understand, they do turn off the television cameras, they do censor what's said. The last thing they want the American people to do is to understand that we have a privately owned central bank that, is, of course, is able to create money out of nothing and buy up the media, buy up the politicians, buy up the corporations, by America.
And there again, President Kennedy tried to get congressional notes printed, and that was another reason.
I carry one of his U.S. notes in my wallet all the time. Somebody told me that was worth about $10,000, or $5,000, they said. I said, I wouldn't sell it for $10. I wouldn't give it away.
Yeah.
Because I use that to show people that, look, there is an answer to the problems. There's an answer right here. Here it is. Here's what Kennedy tried to do, and the first thing Johnson did was revoke that executive order.
Oh, yeah, he did everything.
By which he issued that.
And, of course, Kennedy took 15,000 advisors out of Vietnam, and then LBJ put them right back in again, of course.
Right.
Okay, fine. Well, anything else, Ray?
That's about all I have to say.
God bless. Thanks so much. Glad you're listening.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Okay,
fine. And this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Clay Douglas, who's going to be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference on Memorial Day weekend.
Yes, sir.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and once again, Clay Douglas is going to be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference on Memorial Day weekend. That's on May 27th and 28th. I'm going to be there. In fact, if you're going to come to hear me, you're going to have to get up early because I'm the first speaker on Saturday morning. I don't know whether that's good or that's bad, since sometimes we have trouble getting a full contingent there, but I hope you'll come, and we're going to have, of course, John Vandekamp, who's going to talk about the pedophile scandal and about all of the children who were killed being whisked away to Washington, D.C. To be utilized by some of our congressmen, the young boys, of course. And, of course, there'll be certainly people like Ted Gunderson, who broke the story, has the story of Dr. McDonald, the Green Beret captain, who was sent to jail 25 years ago for the murder of his wife and two children as a cover for a satanic ritual that was carried out in his house. And, of course, the investigators and the prosecutors, the last thing they wanted for the American people to know about this satanic scandal, and even though one of the people involved has actually confessed to the whole thing before she was mysteriously died, why this story has been kept suppressed all these years from the American people. Oh, shucks, how could that have happened? and poor old Captain McDonald, an innocent man, has been kept in jail. Probably Ted Gunderson can talk about that and so many other things. It's going to be a fascinating time. If you'd like more information on the conspiracy conference, the telephone number is 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. And, or you can go to their website at conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon.com. And, of course, Clay Douglas is going to be one of the feature speakers. When are you going to be speaking, Clay?
I think I'm speaking on Saturday, probably right around noon or right before noon.
All right. Well, they gave you a better time than they gave me, but that's all right. I'll look forward to your talk. And I suppose you'll have a table there?
Yes, sir, I will.
And I will have a table, too. So if you can make it, why, you can get a chance to meet both of us. And of course, John Van de Kamp and Will Thomas will be there. And so many. Jim Mars, of course, is going to be there again. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Clay Douglas, who's certainly been on the front lines of this battle for a long period of time, then he's absolutely right.
I got started in this, Ted, right after I saw what the federal government did to Waco and how the press covered it. And the Free American is, that's what it's all about. I want to tell both sides of the story. I have interviewed the Branch Davidians. I've seen the videos inside and saw the 50 caliber bullet holes in the roof of a house full of women and children that had never committed a crime.
Well, Chris, what
I wanted to know why this was happening. Why didn't the DBS, why didn't the Texas Rangers do something about this? And I still would like to know that.
Well, I think I have very little question at all that they sent a special forces team of professional trained killers from our special forces units to kill them. Have you ever heard that story?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe it?
I believe they were there. Yeah, I believe that they went in. I saw the thermal imaging of the fireball running through the place. That wasn't a fire that the Branch Davidians set, and. You know, the mere fact that, you know, when I saw that happening on the television, I told my wife, I can never sit back and watch something like this happen again. And, you know, every American, to me, ought to be feeling that way. That's why I publish a Free American, just to give you the truth, to give you the information here.
And because they got away with that, then, of course, they did what they did at Oklahoma City.
Well, the Oklahoma City, in my opinion, was done to destroy the evidence from Waco, and it was done to turn the American people away from when April 19th rolls around. Now, what do we celebrate? What do we mourn? We mourn Oklahoma City, not the Branch Davidians.
And of course, the other thing is that to this very day, the Federal Bureau of Investigation refuses to release the videotapes that were taken in front of the Murrah Building on the 19th of April, 1995.
And I published Timothy McVeigh's death certificate. You know what his occupation was?
What was it?
U.S. soldier.
Well, I'll tell you what.
He never got a discharge. He was still working for the government, still working for the Army.
Well, you know, that's so hard for people to believe it. Yet, you know, of course, I've talked to Charles Key, and we've read this in several books, that Timothy McVeigh had written a letter to his sister, Jennifer, saying, I am working for a secret special forces team involved in illegal activity. And Charles Key actually has a copy of that letter, who I would trust Charles Key. He's never gotten it for me, but certainly that was brought up at the trial and never mentioned by the media. I wonder why.
The media covers up for what's happening here. And, you know, the Free American is simply the last free paper out there, the free press out there. I report all sides of it, you know, and... You know, I do deal a lot about Israel and the Zionist control of our media and our banks and our banking systems. And somebody said, "Well, Clay, you know, you probably get a little further if you wouldn't talk about the Jews so much." I said, "Well, as soon as the Jews stop talking about the Palestinians and the Arabs and the Muslims, I'll stop talking about them."
Well, of course, you know, you and I would disagree. I think this is a satanic conspiracy that involves certainly many aspects and many races. I believe that Satan is the major mobilizer.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But Jesus told you that the Jews, the Pharisees, were the children of the devil, some of them. You know, that doesn't mean that everybody is. I had somebody come in, and I had one of the stories in Free American. He said, I'm Jewish, and I don't rule the world. And I said, well, then this story doesn't apply to you, does it?
No, of course the thing is that I think the vast majority of Jewish people are wonderful people and very capable and very talented, and God has given them a talent, but there are wicked people within the Jewish religion, as there are wicked people within the Catholic religion, as there are wicked people within the Protestant religion, and
you know,
I happen to be Protestant.
Stan, this is what I tell people. People say, ask me on the radio show, well, Clay, are we going to win? Are we going to win? I said, I don't think it's a matter. I don't think we're going to win. I don't think we're going to lose. I think what we're fighting here is the eternal battle between good and evil.
Well, I don't think anybody would disagree with that. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question for our guest, Clay Douglas. Go ahead, Clay.
Let me give out my number, too.
Oh, go ahead, go ahead.
888-678-1444. I also have the old number, 800 number from the Free American. Every number in the Free American is still good, 877-423-3250. My address is, I'm back in New Mexico, I'm back in Bingham, and we're working here. I'm going to build the first of a series of places called Liberty Villages, which I think is going to, I want to see a return to the small towns that were destroyed and wiped out by the big factories and the industrial compounds, you might say.
Well, certainly the America of the past is fast disappearing. Los Angeles today is a city of immigrants. The vast majority of people there are immigrants, and I'm talking about illegal immigrants. You go to Los Angeles, why, you get Spanish stations and Vietnamese stations and Chinese stations and Arabic stations. You might even hear an English-speaking station. And, of course, this whole thing is very, very carefully planned. They know that the best way to destroy a nation is by an invasion. Can be a peaceful invasion, but it is by an invasion. And then, of course, you have a multicultural, multilingual society with different religions. And, of course, this is how then you can begin to disrupt the structure of society.
Well, it's been called by a lot of different names, but it's called Balkanization.
Right.
And they tried to do that with the blacks after the Civil War. They tried to run them in the South and tried to get them to start their own country. They didn't want to do it because it was a plan, but it didn't work. It's kind of like 9/11 was simply a reenactment of Operation Northwoods, a plan to try to inflame everybody against Cuba.
Only, of course, this time it was a try to inflame the world, at least all Americans, against the Islamic world. In fact, I saw a video this about a week ago that was specifically designed to make me hate Muslims. Well, I'm not going to hate anybody. I don't care, of course, what they say. Certainly there are some Muslims that hate us and, of course, would like to incite people to violence, but if we fall into the trap, if you understand what the trap is, it's to get the Muslims to hate the Christians and the Christians to hate the Muslims.
Well, that's the target for the Third World War. They did the same thing trying to get us to hate the Germans. Most of the people there in America were German. You know, there's nothing wrong with the Russian people. It was the governments that were set up that did the damage in Russia to Russians, and they killed 50 million white Russians.
And, of course, you can't get a war going. You can't get World War III going unless you get us to hate them and them to hate us. That's how you get people be willing to kill. There's a story this last week about a group of Marines apparently went into an enclave after one of their buddies had been killed on the street, and they gunned down 11 women and children, or 13 women and children, and somebody took pictures of it, and now I guess Congressman Murth has come out, saw the videos, and said, they gun them down in cold blood. Now, you're not going to hear that, but you have to understand the mentality of these kids. These are kids over there. They're immature. One of their buddies is killed, and they're going to strike out, and you lose all sense of humanity when you're in war. The purpose of war is to destroy things and kill people. We train people to kill, and then we're surprised when they kill indiscriminately.
I was doing a show on China and how they were developing, and back when Clinton was transferring our a lot of technology and factories over there. I mean, they're still, I believe, making our boots. So if we go to war with them, we'll be doing it barefooted, I guess. And somebody said, got on, called in, "Oh, those damn chinks." I said, "No, you know what? You're not going to do that. You're not going to do that on my show. Because it ain't the Chinese people that are at fault here. It's the governments. And any more than it's the Mexican people that are at fault to come up here to try to look for work. Any more than the blacks, you know, the CIA went into the black neighborhoods and tried to undermine the Black Panthers. They the same way they've gone into, and now if you're in the militia that we started after Waco, if you're in a militia now, oh, that's a terrorist group.
Okay, I figure that probably the CIA and the FBI actually financed much of that. I know I have in my files, you know, a statement by the man who was in charge of three different state organizations, militia organizations, who finally admitted he was being funded by the FBI. And his remark was, "Well, but if I hadn't been getting money from the FBI, how could I have I been funding the militia movement? They have infiltrated the militia, the Communist Party, the Christian Identity Movement, the Black Panthers. They've infiltrated every organization in America. And until people understand that, we create the best enemies that money could buy. We create these forces." In Ireland, the whole hierarchy of the IRA was actually British agents. The chief torturer who killed and tortured to death dozens of people they accused of being British infiltrators was himself a British infiltrator. The number two man of the British IRA was a British agent. Number two man, they could have disbanded at any time. They knew who everybody was.
Well, they've done the same thing to the mafia. I said there's a couple of things I can't tell you. I can't tell you whether the government took over the mafia or the mafia took over the government, and I can't tell you whether the government took over the media or the media took over the government. So,
well, of course, it's sort of a distinction without a difference, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, let's go to Jim, who's calling in here. Jim is calling from Santa Cruz. And hi, Jim, how are you doing?
Good, Dr. Stan.
Hey, good to hear from you, Jim. And thank you for your support.
Oh, anytime. I just wanted to bring up the idea of the FTAA.
All right.
And the idea of a Pan-American Union.
Right.
And, you know, it just seems, I just wanted to get your opinions about this. It just seems like the reason that George Bush hasn't been enforcing immigration laws has something to do with this agenda of a Pan-American Union.
Council on Foreign Relations has already come out in favor of merging. Oh, we don't need to protect our borders. We need to expand them. We need to incorporate Canada and Mexico and the FTAA, or the Free Trade Area of the Americas. That's bringing in the small countries, Nicaragua, Panama, and all that, into that union. Can you say Soviet Union? That's exactly what they're doing. They're absorbing these small countries, bringing it all under the collectivist umbrella. And if they merge Canada and Mexico, what does that do? That wipes out the only protection that we've got as citizens of America. We've got the Constitution, because our founding fathers were fighting these same vultures, these same people, 200 years ago.
And, Jim, you're absolutely right. That's the reason that they have not enforced our immigration laws.
Yeah, and have you heard in the news about that there are plans to, in the years ahead, to allow another 190, the number I heard was 190 million immigrants.
No, it was 196 million immigrants. The article appeared in the Washington Times 2 days ago, and this was based upon a report by the Heritage Foundation. If you'd like a copy of the report, you can give us a call. We'll be glad to send you one. But basically, they said 196 million people will be in the country by the year 2026. That's just 20 years from now. That is the Senate bill, if that were to be enacted at its current status. None of the senators ever read it. It was 614 pages. Senator Sessions tried to get hearings on it, and none of the senators showed up. They were just too busy being busy. And the plan is to destroy America. Anything else, Jim?
No, I think it's all pretty clear when people start to look at it. We got some serious problems.
That is a gross understatement. God bless you. Thanks so much for calling. Well, let's go to Gail, who's calling from Tennessee. Hi, Gail. How
are
you doing?
Well, how are you doing this evening, dear?
Doing fine.
I'm going to be on RBN, calling everybody who speaks on the radio. I love you guys' programming. But you guys got me for 3 days, and I'm going to continue to say this one. Let me give you my credentials. I'm part of the Dole family. As Doles, as in the first president and only president of Hawaii.
All right, fine. You're talking then for the Dole pineapple people?
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine.
Exactly. And
You must be very rich then.
No, I wish I was.
All right, go ahead.
I bought out and opted out of that system a long time ago. I have never voted. I'm over 50 years old. I have never voted in this system. This is not my government.
Well, but you really need to be involved. Maybe you can get an honest congressman in.
Not to vote.
All right, fine. Well, then it's helped to finance the people who are really trying to do something.
I really don't know who is.
All right, I'll tell you a couple of them. Roscoe Bartlett, Ron Paul, and hey, you hang on there just for a moment, would you please? We're going to have to take a little break, and then we'll get right back to Gail, and then we'll, of course, get Clay's thoughts on what you're saying. Again, our guest is Clay Douglas. He's going to be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference, along with a lot of other great guests, Memorial Day weekend, May 27th and May 28th. Okay, Gail, go ahead.
Okay. My family are big-time Masons, along with the Dole family. And what I want to tell you tonight, and I will continue to say this for 3 days, after that I leave this alone. But so far, over the history of mankind, altercations by fighting against a oppressive government has never worked, has it? Violence only begets more violence. You must learn a new form. If you really want to hit these people where it hurts, is take 1 day a week, and I know this is hard to organize, because they have brainwashed everybody around this planet to believe that you need them. But if you could only take 1 day a week, start with that one, would be great, to just sit down and say, I refuse to participate in this system. You would be amazed at how much the people's word of this world would mean. Hit them where it hurts, in their pockets, and it will stop it.
Okay.
I am related all the way to the Queen of England.
All right, fine. Clay, do you have a thought on what Gail is saying?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what she's proposing. I mean, I'm pretty much out of it. I don't live in the cities. I don't do anything.
Nor do I.
Participate in any of the systems. I publish a magazine to try to inform people what is really happening. But I kind of agree with you about the voting. As long as they've got the Diebold machines and that type of thing, our vote doesn't do a lot of good, and we're only allowed to vote for who they show us on television.
Right, and of course, I love the story about the Diebold machine in Ohio, in a precinct where there were 840 votes, and there were 4,000 votes for George Bush, and somebody said, how could you get 4,000 votes for George Bush when there were only 827 people in the precinct? And they said, well, the machine had a hiccup. Well, that explained it. Gail,
the vote has never counted. So long there was that that was initiated during the first constitutional vote for the new republic that started back in 1776, when they had, what was that called?
The Constitutional Convention?
They
were out of time, Gail, but thank you so much for calling, but the program is over.
All right, dear.
God bless, and thanks so very much for being with us.
All right,
okay,
bye-bye.
Fine. That was Gail calling from Tennessee, and she comes from the Dole family, and, of course, there's strong Masonic ties there. And until you understand the influence of the Masons, you can't understand anything. Thanks very much for being with us, Clay.
My pleasure, Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our program this evening. And of course, every evening is a challenge. Tomorrow evening on the second hour, we're going to have Chris Pinto with us. I think you're going to enjoy the discussion. So this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're listening to us, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And certainly you can subscribe to our newsletter. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is www.radioliberty.com. You can go there, listen to us on the Internet 5 hours a day. Of course, you won't get much of anything accomplished, but you can listen 5 hours a day, starting at 7 in the morning and Pacific time and going until 11 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night here on the West Coast. So you can get our shortwave frequencies. We're on 4 hours a day. If you don't get either good Internet or shortwave, you can get us on the Telstar 9 hours a day. And boy, you really won't get anything done. You can also hear Joyce Riley there, Pastor Chuck Chrismeyer, certainly Pastor Butch Paul. And so we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to listening to our programs and then telling other people about it. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to get it. Then you need to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. Because you see, there is another dimension. There really are supernatural forces. There really are spiritual forces at work in our world today. And until you recognize that, so much of what's going on really doesn't make sense. Unless you understand that everything is scripted, the coming war with Iran and the Muslim world is all scripted long ago. And, of course, you need to understand the forces behind this to understand what lies ahead and to begin making preparations. Can we change the course of history? I don't know. I think all we can do is try and do our best. And the ultimate why, it's going to be up to the Lord. This is His battle. We're simply to be the soldiers on the front line doing our best. And this is why I do what I do 4 hours every day. And why we hope many of you will decide you want to join us in this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Certainly my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, the pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. Then, of course, the book, Fire in the Minds of Men, the President Bush talked about, certainly in his second inaugural speech, he talked about Fire in the Minds of Men, referring to a book written by James H. Billington, which we carry, that goes into secret societies. James H. Billington is no rabid right-winger. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He is the Librarian of Congress, a distinguished left-wing writer, but his book has a great deal of important information, and then if you're sure you read my newsletters, you'll get the rest of the story. So what we do is ask you, of course, to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.